everyone. Welcome to the Hoop Collective Podcast. We talk about the NBA, which we're doing on Tuesday evening, while the in-season tournament is a-raging in the NBA. Joining us from Chicago, Illinois, our Midwest and primarily Chicago Bulls and Milwaukee Bucks, but our Midwest reporter, Jamal Collier. What's up, Jamal?
What's up, Brian? How you doing, man?
You've had an interesting day. Joining us from Naples, Florida, our front office insider, who had many interesting days in his career, Bobby Marks.
Gentlemen, how are we doing?
Good. It's a little bit early, but we have a report from The Athletic today, guys, that I'm not even exactly sure how to frame it, but basically what it sounds like is that the Bulls are willing to start the process of looking at making some moves off their roster, specifically with Zach LaVine. To me, it seems like it's the Bulls who are, even though the report implies that it's the other teams that are knocking at the Bulls' door, you know, just can't wait to start Zach LaVine talks. It appears to me that it's actually the Bulls who would like to know what Zach LaVine's value might be. Maybe they trade him. Maybe they don't. Maybe they trade him in December. Maybe they trade him in February. Maybe they trade him next summer. But the process of trading Zach LaVine is at least being, you know, begun. And the Bulls, in my view, would probably like to see just what teams might be thinking he's worth right now. Bobby, I don't know. I don't want to put words in your mouth, Bobby, but you've seen situations like this before.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, especially for a player that's got 4 years and $170 million left, and we're in year one of this new collective bargaining agreement where it's not appealing to have a $40 million player on your books if he's not your number one guy. I mean, that's the reality of the situation here. And I think, and certainly Jamal could talk about this, like we're going to get to a point, you know, Chicago going into, you know, Tuesday nights, 4-7. They lost in the play-in last year to Miami, lost in the first round to Milwaukee the year before. It's like eventually you have to pick a direction where you're going here, because eventually DeMar DeRozan will be a free agent next offseason. I don't know if we'll ever see Lonzo Ball again if we're hoping for that. I don't know if that will ever happen. You have not done a great job drafting. Let's face it, right? Patrick Williams, your lottery pick, is now coming off your bench and is shooting 33% from the field, and down Terry, who you drafted a year ago. I see more press releases about him going back and forth to the G League team.
Yeah. And the guy that drafted Julian Phillips this year can't see the floor. You know, those are two pretty big misses along with Patrick Williams, of just like guys who are not helping them at all.
You've got to eventually pick a path here. Like, and I think the path is going to force you. The decisions not really LaVine, just because he has 4 years left, but some of the other players, like the guy on the roster that's probably got the most value is Alex Caruso. I mean, that's like the reality of it all here, but it will be interesting to see what, if any, you know, value LaVine has out there. It's not the 2-3 first round picks type deal. And I think if you're Chicago, I think, can you rebuild or retool without like basically tearing it down? Can you do what Indiana has done, where you moved off of Sabonis for Halbert and Hield, and you took a step back, but you still had some placeholders there with Miles Turner, and you were still competitive here. And that's the decision that Chicago is going to have to face here.
You mentioned Indiana, and you know, they're kind of just a funny just example, you know, comparison to the Bulls, just because, you know, they end up with Halliburton, who's in that 2020 draft where the Bulls drafted Patrick Williams. And, you know, when you look at the Bulls in that position there, they needed a point guard really badly. They haven't had one for years. If they would have been the team for, and I think Halliburton went at, I think, 11 or 13, I can't remember the top of my head now, but if they would have been the team to grab Halliburton there, just think about how different this franchise could kind of find itself, you know, years later. But you know, as far as now in the LaVine conversation, I think one thing that is especially prudent is what happened here is Tuesday night as we're talking in Chicago. And that was the Champions Classic college basketball, you know, kind of one of the biggest nights of the year for college basketball. where really representatives, general managers, and such from all 30 teams are going to be here in Chicago at the United Center scouting those games and scouting some pretty big high-profile games. And I think I would expect with this that report coming out earlier on Tuesday, it's sort of a perfect time for the Bulls to sort of just, you know, there's a lot of people out there that maybe want to connect with the Bulls about that report, about what happened, about sort of what their actual interest is in moving Zach. So I expect that that would be a hot topic of conversation as the entire league comes on Chicago and the Bulls are sort of playing host unofficially to that.
Yeah. Bobby, do you, I know it's summer league, you know, there's a lot of actual in-face, in-person meetings where trade discussions come to fruition, maybe at All-Star, but is that a real thing that when everybody gets together that it increases trade talks, or is that just something people say?
I think it's a lot of smoke and mirrors. I mean, I think where we are right now is that we're in mid-November, and I think teams are still evaluating. You know, the Harden situation was so different than everything else because it was a player that wanted to be traded, and Philadelphia, you know, basically wanted to move off from him. Like that, you know, that and Jimmy Butler from when Jimmy got traded from Minnesota to Philly are two unique November type trades. Like the teams are still in that evaluation period, that 20 to 25 game evaluation period. You know, we get to mid-December when restrictions are lifted on free agents who sign contracts. That's when you start to see things heat up a lot with that. So it's great that, you know, 30 teams are in one building here, but I mean, you still got phones, you know, like right. if Rob Pelinka is in LA and Arturis Karnišević in Chicago, you don't need to pick up Zach LaVine trade talks if Rob's in the United Center for two games. Yeah.
Well, that's one of the reasons why I think this is the beginning of a process. I don't think Zach LaVine's getting traded tomorrow because, Bobby, you educated us on this more than anything. But even if the Bulls reach the decision that they want to make a trade for, maybe want to trade LaVine, maybe they want to trade DeRozan. I don't know if they want to trade anybody else. A number of players can't be traded until mid-December or mid-January. You know, one of the teams that immediately everyone leaps forward to in a Zach LaVine trade is the Lakers. Well, Bobby, how many guys on the Lakers could you even trade right now? You could trade LeBron and AD. Actually, could you even trade
AD? No, you can't do AD till February 6th.
Right. So the Lakers can't functionally, like, I don't care if prime Michael Jordan was available right now. The Lakers couldn't really functionally make a trade. And with a lot of their players, not until January, right?
Yeah, I mean, you're basically looking, you know, Austin Reeves and Rui Hachimura are until January 15th. You basically have all the players that you signed. Hey, you've got D'Angelo Russell and Gabe Vincent, Torian Prince, players like that. All the players on minimum contracts are December 15th players. But, I mean, you look at a Lakers team that's over the luxury tax right now, close to the first apron. You know, you got to get within 110% of salaries. Zach LaVine makes $40 million. So when you start adding up the numbers, even if we get to January 15th and a Lakers say, you know, we want to make a deal, we feel like we need a third star, which I think is counter argument to how they've built the roster right now, where it's two guys and it's basically a collection of, you know, role players. You know, how do you get to 36? I mean, you could do it, but it could cost you Austin Reeves, Russell, whatever to get you there. They've got a pick in the, I think 2030 they can move. So it does be presented. It's a challenge here, but as you said, Brian, like, you know, we're in mid-November here and trade season really doesn't officially start until at least probably mid-December.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I remember over the summer I was talking about Bradley Beal possible trade. And my viewpoint was for the Wizards that the return that they were going to get in a Bradley Beal trade was going to be getting off of that contract. Not only the length and the amount, but also the fact that there was a no trade clause. And just the act of getting that contract off of their books was a big part of what they would quote unquote get back. Now they ended up making a maneuver and basically landing Jordan Poole, it was a return for him. But I don't think it's quite that spot with Zach LaVine because he obviously doesn't have a no trade clause, but considering his knee issues historically, and I am a believer in Zach LaVine, by the way. I really believed he played well with Team USA in the 21 Olympics, and then he had a really good 21-22 season, which is why he got this contract. However, his results on the court, not favorable as to helping a team win. I don't think he's a Jamal. I don't think he's like a bad guy, right? I mean, he's not.
No, I think that way, yeah, people around the team, you know, love him, love dealing with him. He's, I think, you know, character wise, people enjoy being around the guy, especially.
Yeah, so do I. I've known since he was a rookie or second year player when he was in Minnesota. I like him a lot. I thought he really fit in well as a supporting member of a team when he was with Team USA. I don't know, maybe that would work for in a new spot, but I kind of think it the amount of money he's owed plus the knee plus the fact that he hasn't always contributed to winning at the NBA level. I don't think it's quite Bradley Beal level because it's not, there's no trade clause, but I'm not sure that the Bulls would reap a massive reward for a LaVine trade. Well, Bobby just said a minute ago, and this is something that Bontemps said earlier. I mean, he believes that you could potentially get more return for Alex Caruso than you could get for Zach LaVine. And some people, I think that would be shocking, but you know, you seem to agree with that, Jamal.
Yeah, I think there's almost no question. I mean, think about every contender right now at the top of the standings. Denver, Milwaukee doesn't really have the stuff to go get him, but you plug Alex Caruso on Denver. I mean, just think about how that they're already obviously one of the best teams in the league, but how his defensive presence, his 3-point shooting, sort of next to Jokic, just passing and spacing, like Caruso could be the guy who sort of decides if the Bulls decide to move him, he could decide the championship, or he could decide which team really is kind of the favorite going into the playoffs. So he's for sure the guy that when you start talking about future first and unprotected, like that's the guy of trade deadline season that always kind of becomes really enticing. But I kind of want to go back to what you said about when you think about what Zach's return would be and ultimately why I think, you know, this report, I agree with you that I'm not sure the Bulls have, you know, maybe actually moved any closer today than they were a week or so ago to maybe move in being, you know, at least in the imminent future. And I think that the Bulls have had conversations over the offseason or I think even before that about just preliminary with teams or talks, right? Whatever that is about what Zach LaVine's value as such would be. But I've come under the impression with any team there are people that have talked to the Bulls that have been a part of those talks. It's kind of one of those where the asking price is the price on the player is so high that teams wonder, well, how available is this guy really? And I think the Bulls 4-7, and we can all see it exactly why this team after 2 or 3 years here is sort of on a path to nowhere. You know, at least publicly right now, they are still touting, they're sort of playing all the hits about how they think Zach and DeMar, who are both off to really poor shooting starts, you know, and they want to kind of see how those things stabilize. They want to, you know, they still believe that their team is better than they've shown. And I think that, yeah, as you guys mentioned it, they still do have a month before, you know, December 15th hits anyways, and other guys can be traded. Like, they still have some time to see what this version of this team plays out. And, you know, they've been pretty steadfast, obviously, throughout the past year or 2 years, really, now people sort of wondering when the end of this Bulls team that's currently constructed, when it's coming. They've stuck to their guns. And I think that until I see drastically otherwise their message change on that, kind of have no choice but to believe these guys, because they have every moment it seems like if the trade is going to come at the deadline or the offseason or something drastically is coming. They have not made that move. And I'd be interested to see how bad this has to get for the Bulls to really start thinking about radically rethinking this team.
Well, here's you know, they've got their next four games are home. They've got the two Florida teams. Basically, it's a baseball, almost like a baseball series. You got Orlando twice and Miami twice. I mean, then you go on the road and you got OKC, Toronto, Boston, Brooklyn, Boston, Milwaukee home. That gets you to December 1st.
Miami won tonight in the in-season tournament, and they six in a row now, I think, for the Heat. Yeah, so I don't know, I think this is something to monitor. I don't think it's like red hot. I think it's more interesting if the Bulls are willing to move DeRozan and Caruso than it is that they're moving LaVine. I don't think they would have hung up the phone on anybody calling on LaVine for basically the last 9 months.
100%.
So,
I think Brian, with DeRozan, I think December 30th is a day to kind of circle a little bit here, because, you know, once you get past that date, then what he could be eligible from an extension standpoint basically gets shrunk in half, probably more than half, because he's limited to only 2 years, like $60 million, compared to, you know, like 3 for $130 million because of the, you know, the restriction rules for players traded here. Of course, that team inherits his bird rights. You can sign him outright as a free agent, but you do run the risk a little bit once you get past December 30th. You don't have as much leverage as you did beforehand.
Yeah, but I mean, the situation is this, Jamal. Like, let's say they win 3 of the next 4 games and they're, you know, 7 and 8.
Yeah.
Their situation is not changing. Like, I could be wrong. I don't see them, like, with the way this team is constructed, with where they're at, I don't see them, like, taking off and winning 18 to 20 and, like, competing for the top 4. You know,
I agree with you. But I also think that, you know, I think half the league are just kind of like the standings, and everybody's kind of 5 and 4, 4 and 6, you know, somewhere a lot. And I've seen some teams that have sort of separated from there, a couple at the top, but I'm not sure they're going to be, I'm not sure. There definitely could be a world where they sort of really bottom out the next month. But we saw it last year, the first half of last year, where this team really looked like that they were just going to sort of not even be in the play-in, on the outside looking in, sort of being toward the bottom of the East. And they rode the wave, stabilized in the second half, you know, start playing out Caruso more, because he's the one guy that when they put him on the floor, they have success. And, you know, all of a sudden with, you know, 14-9 after the break, and ended up making the play-in. I think more, you know, yes, I think it would be a drastic turnaround for them all of a sudden to be a top 4 or so team. But if these guys hang around 500, or DeMar all of a sudden goes on another hot run and can carry them for a couple of weeks, I think that the decision makers and the team, the way they have operated, they will be inclined to say, we're going to wait this thing out and see if we can, you know, again, I'm sort of unclear of what the actual goal of what this team will do, but I do think that this team.
Well, yeah, I mean, look, I've said that on this yeah. podcast. I mean, like, I don't think they're going anywhere. And I think if they think they're going somewhere, they're deluding themselves. And, you know, like, you know, maybe they go 15-5 in the month of December, and this could be thrown back in my face. And I suppose it can be, but I think they're deluding themselves. They think this roster, the way it's constructed, is going anywhere.
Well, but, Brian, just look at, I mean, I know I hate going back to when Lonzo got hurt, but I mean, look at the body of work, 19-23 since his injury that first year, 40-42 last year, and 4-7 right now. And I get, and what Jamal said, they were really good after the All-Star break there. I think they were first in defensive efficiency, and, you know, Patrick Beverley played a big role in that. Certainly, you know, Beverley, Caruso, LaVine, DeRozan, and Vooch. You know, that was the 5 you rolled out. And now we're kind of back to, you went out and got Javon Carter, who's probably been one of your better players, at least coming off the bench. Kobe White, fine. Vooch, you signed to $60 million. Torrey Craig, you know, like, it's like the guys you wanted to go out and get, because you were basically ranked in the bottom in 3-point percentage, and you felt like that was where you had to kind of change your offense. Like, they're still in the bottom 10. Like, that's the reality of it. Like, things, I don't know how things are going to change all of a sudden, unless there's a soft part of their schedule and there's some injuries down the road from some other teams here. I just, that's like, you, as I said, you have like, either you pick a direction now, or what happens in this league is the league forces you to pick a direction, because eventually, like, DeRozan is the big wild card because he's a free agent next year. Like, you can't just go and say, you know what, we're just going to play it out, and DeMar DeRozan leaves for nothing, because it's not like you're sitting on $50 million in cap space. Like, the only way you are and, you know, we can say, well, we want about cap space. The only way you're a cap space team next year is if it's determined that Lonzo Ball can never play again. So, you know, hey, that's, you know, this was a team that they've built back in 2021, and change is hard. Like, change is hard when you're in the front office to try to pivot from what you're doing. But, man, you stay kind of on that mediocrity treadmill, and treadmill mediocrity, they'll run you off it.
For sure. All right. So to be, you know, definitely pretty interesting, Jamal, and I appreciate your insight. We're going to be talking about that. To be continued.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and on the Ways to Win podcast, coaches Craig Robinson and John Calipari are here to help. Each week, Craig and Coach Cal use their on-court wisdom to solve your off-court problems. Whether it's trouble at home or a workplace dilemma, the coaches will help you find a winning formula for success. And you'll hear from prominent athletes, business leaders, and celebrities who reveal insights that made them into the leaders they are today. Like President Obama, who breaks down his bracket and talks about how he deals with pressure by projecting confidence, believing in your team, and taking criticism. Listen to Ways to Win wherever you get your podcasts. For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call or click Grainger.com or just stop by. Before we move on to the other team that you cover, the Milwaukee Bucks, we had an incident tonight in Golden State with the Timberwolves. By the way, it's a little bit interesting that some of these in-season tournament games are coming as part of baseball series where the team will play, and then 2 days later they'll play, the two teams will play the same team in the same venue, but it counts as the in-season tournament. That's happened in a couple of instances this week. That happened, I believe, in this game, because the Timberwolves played the Warriors on Sunday. Then the Timberwolves played the Warriors tonight. There was some barking in that game between Draymond Green and Anthony Edwards, you know, Draymond just being Draymond, you know, talking trash at Anthony, Ant coming back and, you know, answering with some incredible play. The Warriors won that game. Ant had 33 points. Well, tonight there was, and I wasn't able to watch the buildup to it, but Klay Thompson and Jaden McDaniels got into it at center court. Rudy Gobert came in, and different people will disagree. Yeah, it just happened a few minutes ago. Different people will disagree as to what Rudy was doing there. Some people may say he was ganging up on Klay Thompson. Some people might say he was trying to break it up. By the time this podcast will come out, there will be a slate of interviews. So we're kind of reacting to this in real time. But what happened that is most interesting is that as Rudy Gobert was entering into the situation, I mean, he had his hands on Klay Thompson, but Draymond Green flew in from out of the scrum and basically put Rudy Gobert into a chokehold. He like grabbed him around the neck with his arm and like was dragging him backwards with Rudy's hands flailing around. And Jaden McDaniels and Klay Thompson were ejected from the game, and Draymond Green was issued a flagrant 2 and ejected. By the way, this will be the 18th time and the second time in a week that Draymond has been ejected from a game. It was already a challenging day for the Warriors, Bobby, because Steph Curry has come down with a knee sprain, and he's getting an MRI, and they're going to see what's going on there. If this team loses Steph for any appreciable amount of time, I don't think they will stay above water, but I suspect that they will be headed for potentially reviewing what happened with Draymond here. Draymond has feuds with like 11 different players, and quite frankly, I need a file. I need like a briefing about which, you know, to remind me of all the feuds. But his feud with Gobert includes like warring for the defensive player of the year stuff. And there was that whole insecurity is always loud back and forth tweets several months apart and other various things. But basically Draymond and Gobert don't like each other. And Draymond did that tweet after Gobert punched, who'd he punch, Bobby? I forget.
Kyle Anderson. Was it Kyle Anderson?
Kyle Anderson. He punched Kyle Anderson, and they didn't take him to the play-in game. And, you know, that's when Draymond, you know, tweeted insecurity is loud, etc. But, you know, Draymond has been, you know, probably itching to put Rudy Gobert in a chokehold for some time, whether it's figuratively or literally. And the video on this is crazy. He like flies in from out of nowhere and just, you know, so I don't know what you think is going to happen there, Bobby, but that's a little bit of an interesting development here in season tournament action.
Well, if we go by the guidelines and we look at that prior history is taken into strong account that the league says, then I think we will see a suspension for Draymond Green. It's interesting. Vince Goodwill of Yahoo wrote an article about, you know, taunting, you know, and he got and Monty McCutcheon talked about it, and Monty, you know, said that, you know, taunting could lead to fights and all that stuff. Now I'm thinking, well, you know, the league's probably going to look at it in a different way now when we do these baseball series. Maybe it's not a good idea to have a regular season game before the play-in game, because this thing probably was brewing from the other night. You know, the Minnesota goes into Golden State and beats them, and it's basically like it's a playoff series, right? It's like game two of the playoffs here. Now Golden State's coming in with a chip on their shoulder, trying to set the tone here, and here we go.
By the way, we had a situation like this, Philly, Indiana. Indiana played against Philly on Sunday. Maxey puts up 50, and B puts up 37. They dance around on him, not necessarily showing him up, but, you know, they have a big-time game. Tyrese Halliburton comes back with 33 points, 15 assists, no turnovers, and the Pacers win. Even the series at 1-1. When's game three, Bobby? Happened tonight.
If you had Indiana on your bingo card for playing for a in-season tournament, one of the four representing the East, you know, you might be in pretty good shape there.
I don't think we're going to get this kind of juice and that Bulls magic back-to-back this week for me, but, you know, never know. Now I got something to look forward to.
Yeah, well, so that'll definitely be a topic of conversation tomorrow. It'll be interesting to see if Draymond talks to the media after the game. I don't know if they'll let him, but I'll be interested to see if he plays the victim card, because he likes to do that. But I don't know what his defense is going to be here, because he inserted himself into he escalated the situation.
Yeah, where does he even fly? I was trying to find Draymond's where does he fly in from?
You need to activate Hawkeye. You need to activate Second Spectrum to watch him. Because the altercation, like I said, I don't have the, you know, what the buildup was to the exact play, but Jaden McDaniels and Clay got into it. And, you know, I don't think either of them have a reputation for being instigators, but Draymond, it is interesting that Gobert stayed in the game. When they reviewed it, they didn't deem that he instigated whatever he was doing as he put his hands on.
He's right. He's right behind these two guys as they, you know, start getting.
Right.
It.
He didn't run, you know, 30 feet to get
the length of the court.
I mean, Draymond came in like a, you know, a wrestler coming, you know, from coming running down the stage. He was at the Ultimate Warrior. Draymond came in like the Ultimate Warrior there. He had him in a grade A chokehold. I assume if you've listened this far, you've already seen it. So we won't talk more about it. But I would tend to agree with you, Bobby, that he's probably looking at a suspension. I also will say that whenever a player faces a suspension, there's an instantaneous reaction from people. That's 3 games. That's 11 games. That's 37 games. It's never, you know, reactionary in the NBA. He may merit suspension.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great point too. And it's like, it's, you know, there's certain, you know, you had a lot of different people who were in charge of basketball operations at the NBA at one point, you know, certainly Rod Thorne and Kiki Vandeweghe. And now we've got Joe Dumars, and everybody kind of like, if you're thinking, well, this guy got 2 games for doing that same thing, I think you're going to be wrong as far as what the suspension is going to be, because the league looks at it. I mean, it's basically they're opening up a police investigation after the game, right? There'll be a full investigation. And as I said, what Green's prior history will come, it has in the past, and it will probably again in this case.
Well, the situation is that there's going to be, just because he had him around the neck and he did drag him, I don't know, 10, 15 feet. I'm not sure, but he did drag him, and there's some footage that just is not great. It just looks really, really bad. And it's going to be one of those things that is going to be shown outside NBA circles. It's going to be on Good Morning America. It's going to be on, you know, other non-sports shows. And so, you know, the league may face a little bit of scrutiny on this one. But I don't know. I'm sure we'll be talking about that with Bontemps and McMahon when we talk on Thursday. All right. To be continued on that one. Jamal, the other team that you spend a lot of time covering, the Milwaukee Bucks, not playing tonight, have won a couple of games in a row now that Dame Lillard came back from that leg injury. They are a team that we've talked about on the pod quite a bit because their record is not awful. It's 6-4, but some of the things about their team are worrisome, particularly their defense. You have covered Milwaukee very closely for the last 3 years. What has been your impression of the way that this team that was really figured to be like a juggernaut has started this season?
Just a lot of weirdness all around. I mean, I think one, you hit it right there, the defense being not, you're so used to that just being kind of the staple with Milwaukee that they are going to defend. They're going to be up near the top of the league. And under Bud, they were for so many years. And I was under the impression that even though they had, you know, moved Drew Holiday, you still have Giannis, you still have Brook Lopez, and that unit is going to still be a strength for these guys. And it just hasn't. I mean, I think that they thought bringing Dame into their sort of defensive culture, their defensive presence and such, right, was going to almost like by osmosis make him a better defender or make him, you know, sort of more equipped on that end. And that has just not been the case. And really just not even just on Dame, like their entire perimeter defense is just, you know, between Malik and I think, you know, Middleton not playing really any kind of, you know, any kind of full complement of minutes also hurts them because they just, you know, at that end have just not been effective at all. I think there's some weirdness to say the least, or at least like not necessarily a smooth start with their head coach, you know, Adrian Griffin, and it's, you know, 10 games in his career. I think just talking to players last night, sort of just about, or the other night after their game, just about Griffin. And I think that was sort of the theme about it in general. It's just like it's 10 games in, he still hasn't sort of really formed what his identity and his how he wants to approach things as a head coach all the way yet. And I think that like for the Bucks right now, that's sort of been their rallying cry, is that even though all these things, Dame is also not shooting the ball very well at all, 27% from three. you know, talk to Dame about that, as a matter of fact, in the locker room after that Chicago game on Monday night. And, you know, he kind of was admitted that really he felt like he's still getting his legs and everything under him. He didn't play any basketball. He picked up basketball at all in the offseason and late in September when he normally starts sort of getting back into game shape because of from the trade hanging over his head. And I think that he still doesn't feel all the way back to where he'd like to be, or normally is at this point in the season. So I think for the Bucks, the thing that they're hanging their hat on right now is that the fact that they have been able to still win some of these games, like, you know, despite all the things going on, you can look up and be, you know, 3-7 or whatever it is. And the fact that they do have a record of 500.
There was a stat that they didn't, I think their first 6 or 7 games, they didn't cover in any of the first 6 or 7 games.
Which, I think they're 0-9 still.
Okay, well, they've played 10 games. So I don't know if they covered, but that's an indication of a team. Like, look, I don't really care about the betting lines, but I think that's an indication of a team that is underachieving. And for the fact that you know that they didn't cover, because I think didn't they start? They started 5-2. Does that sound right?
No,
5-2. Yeah, 5-2. Okay. Yeah. And then they lost at Indiana.
Okay. So Jackson tells us they're 1-8-1 against the spread.
There it is.
And I think they went 0-6-1 in their first 7 games and were 5-2, which is an indication that maybe they were fortunate to be 5-2.
Yeah.
You know, and I know that they skated on a game or two where they could have gone either way and they got it off of it. But like, you know, last year, you know, they were the number one overall seed. I have to go look at their net rating. But last year, you know, they were pretty impressive from start to finish. And so, look, I know that Chris Middleton has not played that much. And, I know that, Dame missed some games, and now they've, got injuries to their wing players, particularly Jay Crowder, who's out 2 months with a torn adductor muscle, which just sounds very painful.
And he had
He
been
had
really good for
surgery.
them. They got him in the trade last, offseason after the whole thing kind of went down in Phoenix, the last trade deadline. And he really never took off at all last year, but he had transformed into really a key piece. I mean, Adrian Griffin was pretty much their sixth man off the bench. I mean, Bobby's kind of their unofficial first guy off the bench, but they were really relying on Crowder pretty heavily early in the season. That's going to hurt them.
Yeah, so I mean, look, they could win nine in a row. I'm not, super, focused on it, but they are underachieving. Like, I think that's a fair thing to say.
I'm surprised that Dame and Giannis have not, that transition has not looked as smoothly as you would have thought. The defense, I think, is one thing, and it's certainly been even worse than everybody anticipated. But, offensively, you thought they would be just like a juggernaut with those two, and so far, not really.
Well, I think there was an assumption, Bobby, that the pick and roll was a can't miss situation. But I will say that both Dame and Giannis are used to being the front end of that pick and roll, being the control end of that pick and roll. I'm not sure Giannis is, when Giannis thinks about the pick and roll with Dame, I'm not so sure he's thinking about setting 40 screens. I still think it's going to work because I think their talent is very compatible. But, I do think it does require Giannis to play a style that he's not quite familiar with, and that may be a factor too.
Well, I mean, I think, 1-3 on the road so far, given a ton of points. I think four out of your next five are on the road, but you've got Toronto. I mean, Toronto's going to be interesting. They go up to Toronto on Wednesday. You had just gone up there a week ago, I think, got your doors blown off, and then you're in Charlotte, home for Dallas, at Washington, at Boston. So you could run off four or five, or five, potentially five, five in a row. There, it's going to be interesting. The Crowder injury is going to force some of their younger players to grow up pretty quick, whether it be, Marjon Beauchamp, who's played, pretty significant bench minutes, or Andre Jackson, their second round pick from UConn here, because that, they made a concerted effort to go out and get Jackson, Chris Livingston, guys, those younger development players here. I mean, you still have, Pat Connaughton, but what happens when Middleton rests? That's the key. Like, I always thought, like, as getting Lillard and the Giannis combination and kind of figuring that out, that was important. But what you get from Middleton is like was always going to be the X factor, and certainly how it's gone so far is that they're easing him in, whether it be on a minutes restriction. They're the days of Chris Middleton playing 35 minutes is, it's that's going to be, certainly not right now. And you lose a guy that can give you, 20, 25 points, from that.
Yeah, I mean, I think if anything,
Yes.
like this is highlighted. This start for them is, like you said, highlighted just how important Chris is going to be for them going forward. Because at this level of production, and obviously, maybe he'll get to a point as, to play more minutes. And again, they all keep insisting, the team, Middleton himself, insisting that he's healthy and this is the plan, and they want to ease him into it and have him for later in the season. But they just simply need more from Middleton. He said, this level of production is not going to be good enough if they're going to be one of the top teams in the East.
Bobby, are you surprised that they haven't hired a replacement assistant coach for Terry Stotts?
Yeah, yes and no. I mean, I think Joe Prunty, who's now basically been, I guess, bumped up to number one, was there before, was the interim coach after Jason Kidd had gotten let go. Certainly was the interim coach in Atlanta also after Nate got let go last year. Was it last year? Last year. So it, it's, I could, I think if you're comfortable with Joe as your number one veteran guy, then that's fine. But I think the Terry Stotts leaving was big just because of the relationship with Lillard from Portland and already having a comfort level there.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that's a big void.
By the way, there was just a mild Donnybrook in Los Angeles between Anthony Davis and Desmond.
I tell you what, I got the wrong game. I'm watching Clips Denver. I'm 0 for whatever. There's nothing.
Listen, man, this in-season tournament, the blood's running hot. Maybe this is what the NBA wants. They want.
Well, I know we're not talking Clips, but it feels like the Clippers are at game 80 right now. I don't know if it's that mile high, you know, altitude up there, but they, that's another day.
We'll see what happens with that one. That's it's Nuggets are up by 10 as we speak. Yeah. I just, look, we're 10 or 11, 12 games into the season. You know, there's a few teams that are underperforming, you know, the Cavs, for example, they're 4-6. They've had some injury issues and some stuff. The Suns are 4-6, obviously some injury issues. So like, I don't want to look at the Bucks and be like, oh man, what a, you know, boy, they're really, you know, having some real problems there. They're just underachieving. And I think it's definitely bears watching, especially when you have a rookie head coach. When you have a rookie head coach who's having to deal with that, it's a factor.
Listen, I'm sorry, Jamal, go ahead.
Well, just that I was going to say, Giannis said it after the game the other night, and I think that it's kind of just to sum it up for them. They're trying to figure out what their identity is. You know, for years the identity was really well defined, and the defense with Drew and Brooke kind of at the point of attack and at the rim. You know, it was very obviously Giannis played a big role in that, but like there was a very clear identity of how they want to play and what they want to do every single night. And because the Dame trade happened a week before training camp, because they have a first-year head coach, because they have so many kind of different parts and pieces, I do think that they're on the fly figuring out still what kind of team do we want to be. And their DNA is telling them that they want to be this defensive juggernaut that I'm not sure that they're playing, their roster right now is going to be able to actually live up to.
I mean, I just look back to, you know, in Brooklyn when we had hired Jason Kidd as a rookie head coach. I mean, Jason, but didn't even, Adrian was on a bench. Jason wasn't. And you basically like, here you go. Here's your Hall of Fame, quote unquote, team. And they didn't figure it out until Joe Johnson hit a shot in Oklahoma City right after New Year's Day. And the only reason why we figured it out is because Brooke Lopez broke his foot in Philadelphia and we were forced to put Garnett at center. And Pierce at the four.
He had to go small. He had to go small and it ended up working out for him.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, it worked. That mode worked so well to hire Jason Kidd with no coaching experience that the Nets, with their next iteration of a super team with a bunch of Hall of Famers, hired Steve Nash with no coaching experience. This is the NBA. Gotta love it.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, but nothing on your roof. So who's ever up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, girl-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Before we go, Bobby, you and Kevin Pelton are doing a series of rankings of rookies and their performance throughout the season. The first batch of those results, you're basically ranking the rookies. Am I correct in saying that?
We are. Well, the first article is coming out on Thursday. It's kind of a like an intro to what we're doing. We do have rankings kind of in the tail end, but we, of course, there's a big deep dive into Chet and where Victor is right now. I think both of us agree that Chet is probably, if we were voting rookie of the year after 10 games, which doesn't happen, probably Chet is probably a little bit of ahead. But I think, I think there is, I understand the rules of a player who misses a year and is still eligible for rookie of the year, but you know, Chet's got a big advantage over Victor from last year. I think, I know he didn't play, but I think just being with that Oklahoma City team, being able to see all 30 teams up close and personal, basically he's got a scouting report in his head, and there was little roster turnover to this Thunder team. They basically only added 3 new players that he could, as I wrote in it, like basically he could visualize as far as where he likes the ball, where he likes to be, the comfort level, where with Victor, it's, you know, I think Pop said it's basically like, this is a trial and error year. And then we're going to basically kind of figure out how to, you know, figure out how to, you know, evolve the offense around him. Especially there's, the point guard situation with Sohan, as far as who's, you know, running the show. And so, yeah, so we do a big deep dive into those two guys. And it's funny, you know, both of them played Tuesday night, and it was like basically watching like Rocky 7, right? Like the seventh, like it was like, oh my God, we could have just ended after Rocky 3 or Rocky 4. And so, you know, they both certainly struggled, which is to their rookies. But Kevin had texted me because we have Asar Thompson, number 3 on our rookie rankings. And he, tongue in cheek, said, anyway, we can change the article and put Asar number 1, who has played,
awesome.
Guy gets 3 rebounds walking out to the jump ball at center court.
He had 9 midway through the first quarter the other night against, and I mean, the Bulls missed 8 shots in a row to start the game off, so it was pretty easy to just grab him, but it was just incredible.
Well, in one of the stats I have, he had 13 steals and 19 blocks in his first 10 games, the most since Marcus Camby in 96-97. He had 4 blocks against Phoenix, although they are the Fred VanVleet type blocks where they're strips, not full. There are 2 of them are strips, 2 are, were blocks here. And his teammate Marcus Sasser has played at a high level. Now, here's the thing that's going to be interesting. With Jaden Ivey back, and you're trying to integrate Ivey into the rotation, Sasser plays 8 minutes in their loss to Atlanta. And we have him 4th on our rookie rankings here. But yeah, I mean, we go into it deep dive. I mean, you know, certainly Scoot.
I wonder if the Pistons have any interest in Zach LaVine, Jamal. I said, I wonder. Okay. Just to be clear, I wonder.
Doing the trade.
Sorry, Bobby. I didn't mean to.
Jamal's doing math in his head. He's trying to think 125% within who is on Bojan.
Yeah. They have guys.
How do we get
the
numbers?
Money.
But that's the other thing about Asar is the Pistons are awful. They're awful. Yeah. And you know who else has been awful is the Spurs. And that's the thing. So this is the first, Tuesday night's the first Victor Chet game. I went to the preseason game that they played in October, and it was absolutely amazing. I talked about it on the pod. Like, you know, they both scored 20 points in the first half. They were both one-upping each other. It was like, holy Moses. You know, they had this, high profile of as a junior game has ever been. When they play each other in the World Cup final a couple years ago. So I wrote this big story for ESPN today about like their potential rivalry. And I understand that it's really hard to project rivalries. You can't just, especially in the NBA, you can't just declare this is going to be a rivalry. You know, it's unwise to do that, but you know, these guys, you know, one plays in Oklahoma City, one plays in San Antonio. They both have similar style games, you know, both rookies. You know, they also have an edge to the way they play. And I've felt that they have an edge towards the way they play against each other. Not that it's like hatred or anything, although maybe down the line, But I think that both of them are acutely aware of what the other one can do and, you know, how they're linked. So I get all excited about this game tonight. I thought TNT was really smart for putting this one on national television. I think the second meeting between the two teams is in January, I think, is also on national TV. But anyway, Wemby goes 4 of 15 in this game, scores 8 points. And he did have 14 rebounds, and Holmgren wasn't much better. He went 3 of 10, had 9 points. Neither of them cracked 10 points. It's a 40-point game. I think it ended up being a 35-point spread. It was a 40-point game. And TNT ended up checking out of it and putting on other games. So not the greatest first meeting for the two of them on national TV. Oh, well, I stand by what I said. I'll just go back just because I was there. I mean, there's been a bunch of different guys who have been, you know, ticketed to be rivals, but I'll just go back to when I was there, like the fourth or fifth game of LeBron's rookie year, his first home game, he plays Carmelo and it was, you know, made for TV matchup, Carmelo LeBron. And LeBron was absolutely horrible in that game. I think he had 5 or 7 points, 3 of 15 or something. Carmelo was okay. He was better than LeBron, but he wasn't anything special. And the hero of the game was Earl Boykins, who was 5'5". And it was hard. And it was, you know, I think it was TNT or ESPN. I think it was TNT, and much bigger buildup than this. And it was, you know, basically a dud. And yeah.
Shea, the hero of this game, at least, is no Earl Boykins.
No, no, that's true.
My favorite, Sports Center tweeted the photo of it, but the jump ball between Victor and Chet, and it's just arms. It's just so much arms. I mean, just for, you know, a lanky guy growing up too, I wish I could have seen this matchup on my television growing
well,
up.
Well, our former colleague, Royce Young, who is now a Thunder employee, of course, had to quote tweet that and say that although Victor is taller than Chet, Chet's vertical is higher, and that they're basically even as far as from a size standpoint here. So,
yeah. Well, here's the thing: like Chet has a big belief in himself, and Victor has a big belief in himself, and their teams can try to downplay however they want the two of them. I'm telling you, having seen with my own two eyes and knowing a little bit about these guys, I don't know if it'll mature. There's a lot of stuff that has to happen for it to work, but it's as exciting as a rivalry as we've seen in a long time, in my opinion. And by the way, Asar Thompson tonight, 21 points, 8 rebounds, 5 assists, and 3 steals against the Hawks for the Pistons, which I think they lost. because that's just kind of the way it goes. The Pistons have all these really interesting young players, and all they do is lose. They're 2-10. But the Spurs are getting boat raced right now. Not just tonight, but like they're, and Victor is in a pretty significant shooting slump. I think his last 5 games, he shot under 40%. I haven't run the numbers because he was 4 of 15 tonight, but I think he might even be like around 33% the last 5 games. Really having a hard time with his shot, which is kind of more what I expected from him after seeing him in summer league. And then he was really good in preseason, and then like lit the world on fire in his first 5 games. So he has come back to earth a little bit. Chet coming into this week was shooting 50, 50, 90. I didn't expect the 50% 3-point shooting to last, but yeah, Asar Thompson, Bobby, the rankings are set, but Asar, I'm sure the Pistons fans are going to have something to say when they come out on Thursday.
Well, these are month-to-month rankings, so a lot can change in the month of December. But I think it's real quick. I mean, it is interesting that some of the players that were drafted in the 20s, whether it be Jaime Jaquez in Miami or Julian Strouther in Denver, the teams that, you know, we talked about it a lot in June, teams that didn't have much of a budget and were forced to draft these older players because, you know, they didn't have the mid-level exception to go out and sign players in free agency, are now contributing. Jaime had 21, I think, in the win against Charlotte here for a Miami team that's played, I think they've won 6 in a row. Strouther had a 21-point game a week ago in a Denver win here, and you're starting to see, you know, contributions from guys like that who are a little bit older and guys who were picked in the 20s. Maybe their upside is not higher than some of the Brandon Millers and the Scoot Hendersons of the world, but can come in and play at a high level right now.
Yeah. And, you know, I think that's one of the things where, you know, I got this lecture when I was a young kid in the NBA that, you know, you always have to, you know, when you draft, you always have to draft for the highest upside, the highest potential, you know, which is why you don't see a lot of four-year guys get drafted. But sometimes four-year guys can come in and really make a big impact, you know, and Dame Lillard was one of those guys, you know. So I look forward to reading that because, you know, the rookie class, this rookie class, including Holmgren, it's a potential to be a really interesting rookie of the year race. You know, the thing about the LeBron year, you know, LeBron and Melo were relatively close in rookie of the year voting. And LeBron won it, and it wasn't like by 5 votes. I mean, he won it with a little bit of airspace, but it was close because Melo's team was so much better, got to the playoffs. And so, you know, if you're arguing for a fact why Chet may be ahead of everybody is that, you know, I don't think the Spurs and the Pistons look like playoff teams, whereas the Thunder are. So I don't know if that's a factor for you, Bobby, but that is something that could end up being a play out as this race, you know, heats up over the next few months.
Yeah, I mean, especially when, you know, Oklahoma City will maybe pick up more national TV games and they'll be more relevant than where, you know, when we get past January 1st, you know, San Antonio becomes, you know, probably less relevant here.
Well, I would advise, speaking of national TV games, I would advise everybody to take a look at picking up some Pacers games because we mentioned earlier, they snapped the 76ers 8-game win streak tonight in Philly. I did a piece over the summer in Manila during the World Cup because Tyrese Halliburton has yet to appear on TNT. And, because he was with the Kings before they were any good. And then he's been with the Pacers and they haven't been a draw in a small market. And this year, the Pacers got one TNT game and it's like January 23rd or something like that. And I asked him about it and he knew the date like that. He's like, January 23rd. And I was like, geez, Tyrese, like you really know off the top of your head, like what day you're going to be on TNT, like you for your first time, it's like that big of a deal. And he's like, well, it's my girlfriend's birthday, so I remembered that. And I was like, okay. But I think he'd only been on ESPN. I think he's only on ESPN like a couple of times. So
maybe the next one will be December 7th on TNT in Vegas.
Very good.
Neither one of us.
Well, they are 2-0. In group, yeah. Whatever, I don't know which, they're in the driver's seat, having beaten the Cavs and Philly already in that pod, in that group. So they are in excellent position to advance to the quarterfinals.
Anybody who hasn't watched the Pacers game yet that may want to tune in after hearing this, you're going to see a lot of points on both ends. They're going to give up a whole lot, but they, you know, I think it's the 7th straight game they score at least 130 points or something. Like that they
play super fast. Yeah, they play super, super fast. They are the number one offense. I don't know where they rank in defense at this moment, but they play super fast. And you know, the thing about Halliburton that's so impressive is he hasn't been turning the ball over. He's got like, you know, let me see what his last few games are in assist to turnover, but like when you play that fast, you're going to open yourself up to turnovers, and it just hasn't been happening. So let's see his last 5 games. I'm not finding it here, but
no turnovers.
His last two is 32-0.
Yeah.
Just the turnovers.
no turnovers tonight again. I mean,
right. So his last 5 games total, he has 5 turnovers. And let's see if I can find a number of assists. His last, wait a minute, that's not him. That's Miles Turner. I did this the other day. I hit the wrong thing. And I was like, hey, Andrew Wiggins is averaging 6 points. And I was like, oh, actually that's Kevon Looney. His last 5 games, he has 6 turnovers his last 5 games. And he has, let's see, you're going to hear me do some math here. 32, 42, 55, 63 assists to six turnovers in the last five games for him. And he has shot almost 60% in those games as well, a little bit under 60%. And he shoots threes. You know, he's not shooting just layups. So he is red hot right now. And the Pacers are somebody that you may want to check out. Maybe December 7th and December 9th. Actually, I think the quarterfinals are televised on national TV too, Bobby. So if he gets there, like,
there you go.
I think it's December like 3rd or 4th. I think he might get it even sooner. So, all right. Thanks for listening to New Collective Podcast. Thank you to Jackson, our producer, and our new producer here joining us at ESPN and also joining us on the pod tonight, Adrian. Welcome, Adrian, to the Hoop Collective family. Thank you to Bobby. Thank you to Jamal. We'll be talking to you again on Friday with the Tims, and look forward to speaking to you then.